Blog Talk Radio.
In 1979, with the help of three armed men, she broke out of the women's prison in Clinton, New Jersey.
She made her break this afternoon from the prison in Clinton, New Jersey, and lawmen once called her the soul of the Black Liberation Army.
Chesimard went underground and then surfaced in the 1980s in Cuba under Fidel Castro's protection. Chesimard, or Assata Shakur, insisted she had killed no one and was railroaded by an all-white jury and by what she called racist New Jersey state troopers.
Did you shoot Werna Foster?
No, I did not. I was shot with my arms in the air, then shot again in the back, and then left on the ground to die. I never received justice. And I escaped, A, because I was afraid for my life, and B, because I knew that I would never receive justice.
Herself as a fighter for racial justice by what she called armed struggle if necessary.
People have the right to free themselves from oppression by whatever means may be impossible. I escaped. It was a clean escape. No one was hurt. I planned it as well as I could plan it, and that's all I got to say about it.
When she was sent to Clinton, we knew that at some point in time she'd be rescued, and she was. It happened on November 2nd, 1979. Ms. Shakur broke out of the maximum security facility for women in Clinton, New Jersey. And I say it wasn't an escape, it was a rescue, because people came in from the outside, assaulted that facility, and took her out.
And greetings, Ma'at Hotep. You are in tune to a special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. I'm hoping that we are okay because I'm not seeing anything on my boards that indicates that folks are calling in. So I'm not sure what's going on, but of course I'm not surprised given the fact that we're talking about a topic that certainly this government and others, do not want us to have this conversation about. So again, I'm not seeing anyone on my boards, which is a kind of indication that something is kind of going on. So what we're going to do, family, is continue on with tonight's program. Hopefully, we can refresh. So what we're going to do, family, give me a few moments. I'm going to try to refresh to see if I can get folks in. For some strange reason, I'm not able to see anyone in queue. And again, this is all very interesting. So please bear with me. I'm going to try to refresh to see if I can see anyone, and then we will proceed. So hold on. You're just going to do a quick check. Okay. Nope. It doesn't seem like that's working. Wow. So I guess what we need to now do is try logging out, and family, again, bear with me. We're going to try to log back in to see if we're able to see anyone in on our boards. I cannot see any people on our boards, and I know people are calling in. So, bear with us. We're going to do another quick technical thing to see if we can get folks in, and hopefully that will do it. So you might get kind of cut off for one moment, but we're going to get back in. So bear with us, please. Okay. For some reason, I'm still not seeing any of our callers. We are back. Let's see, Brother Hasim, I got your message, and it says that, hold on one moment. Okay, it appears that you are there. But unfortunately, I am not seeing anyone on the boards, which is, again, very, very interesting. So that means we cannot answer any calls nor are we able to connect with anyone. So let's try to do this. I'm going to see if I can call out real quick. So let me try that. Okay. Brother Hasim, if you can hear me, because it seemed like you can hear me. So if you can hear me, perhaps if you just send me a text to indicate, okay. Okay, you're saying let's continue. Okay. All right, family. So apparently, for whatever reason, I'm not able to see anyone on. Okay. Yep. So people are hearing me. Great. Okay. So I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to try to call Brother Lumumba on Cage to see if he's able to hear me, and if so, maybe he can give his report, and then I'm not sure how to proceed with the boards because, okay, everybody's saying that they can hear me, but family, I cannot see anyone in queue. For some reason, I cannot see anyone on my boards. So again, I'm going to call in Brother Lumumba and get him to give us information about Brother Siddiqui, Kamal Siddiqui. And so what I'll do is call him, and maybe we can end that way, because right now I'm not seeing not one person is showing up on my boards. Excuse me. So let's do this. Brother Hasim, I see you. Yeah, he's saying it's weird. Yeah, it is. But not really. I mean, again, we don't have problems often, but okay, I'm starting to see people now. Very good. Wonderful. Okay. Finally, I'm starting to see people come. Uh-oh. And one person just got knocked off. So, again, I'm not sure what's going on, y'all, but interestingly enough, a few people did pop up on my board, but now it's disappearing. Okay, I know what's going on. So those of you who are able to hear me through your live stream, your internet, but the people who are calling in, for some reason, I'm not able to see them. Okay, looks like I do see Sister Munira. I think I see you in queue, but a few other people call, but I'm not seeing it. Okay, but anyway, let's go to call Brother Lumumba and get some information from him on Brother Kamal Siddiqui. That was one of the political prisoners that we wanted to, give you information on. So give me a moment and let's do that. Okay. All right. Still don't know why we're not seeing any of our people. And I know that they're there, so we will continue on nevertheless. Okay, let's try this. And hopefully we can get through. It's ringing. All right, moving right on. Interesting that we are not able to see folks on our boards. Okay, Brother Lumumba, are you there? Wow, he just got disconnected. This is so funny. Let's try one more time. All right, there's some strange reason. Look at how peaceful night, family. I wonder why that is.
Peace.
Okay, great. We got you now. All right, we're having quite a few technical difficulties, interestingly enough. Wow.
I see.
Yeah, it's very interesting. People are calling in, but the calls are dropping off and so forth and so on. So what I'd like to do while I try to see how we can maybe, it seems like the people that are doing live stream are okay, but the folks who are calling in, I'm not seeing them on my boards. So
right.
I'm not sure how to rectify that. But in the meantime, okay, family, so again, this is what we call Sister Asada Liberation Day. And for those who do not know, of course, today is the anniversary of the day that she was, in fact, liberated from the plantation slash incarceration prison. And, you know, needless to say, we recently lost, of course, a primary person who is said to be, you know, not only, you know, supportive of Sister Asada Shakur, but definitely her brother, and that was, of course, Dr. Mutulu Shakur. But at any rate, the other part that we wanted to share with everyone is some information about Brother Kamal Siddiqui, one of our former or present political prisoners. And again, our focus is making sure that we get information circulated about our political prisoners. And so with that said, Brother Lumumba, what do you have for us?
Yes, I do have some information that I can share on Baba Kamal. Should I...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Should I proceed? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So this information is on Baba Kamal Siddiqui. All right. Baba Kamal is a former member of the Black Liberation Army. He is currently serving a life sentence for the killing of an Atlanta police officer in November of 1971. Baba Siddiqui's case was part of a renewed campaign during the early 2000s, actually in 2003, to target former revolutionaries from the 1960s and 70s. As a little bit of a backstory, Baba Siddiqui, known at the time as Freddie Houghton, had joined the Black Panther Party, working out of the Jamaica Queens office in New York, where he worked primarily in the free breakfast program, providing free meals to children in the community. He was described by those who knew him as a passionate man who had internalized the 10-point program and platform of the original National Black Panther Party, 3 main rules of discipline, and 8 points of attention of the Panther Party. When the free breakfast program was over for the day, he reported to the office, gathered his papers, and received his assignment for the day. He went out to sell, went out in the community to sell his papers. While selling his papers, he continued to educate the people while organizing tenants, welfare mothers, and whoever he came into contact with. Following years later, the Black Panther Party began to grow and gain national attention. The director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, declared the Black Panther Party to be the greatest threat to national security. As part of an ongoing FBI counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, the U.S. government engaged in an offensive campaign to neutralize and destroy the Black Panther Party. In 1968, a memorandum, the FBI director, had instructed agents to submit imaginative and hard-hitting counterintelligence measures aimed at crippling the Black Panther Party. Within a context of gang warfare and attendant threats of murder and reprisal. In subsequent years, the agency fostered divisions internally within the Black Panther Party and externally with other organizations, leading to violent conflicts and death. Members of the organization were also targeted by federal, state, and local policing agencies, in one instance leading to the political assassination and the police murder of Fred Hampton, a rising member of the Black Panther Party, based in Chicago. All right. And so in 1971, Baba Siddiqui and a dozen other members had moved to a house in Georgia, DeKalb. Okay. At this time, the Black Panther Party's, based on the ongoing threats and pursuit of the FBI and the counterintelligence program, many members decided that the best idea was to go underground, all right, and they began to do so. To surmise the story, in 1971, shortly after midnight, Atlantic officer James Green was shot 3 times and killed while sitting in a parked police van, okay? There were several members of the Black Panther Party that were indicted for the charge, a raid was issued on the house in Atlanta. Baba Siddiqui was not present at the time, okay? He was underground for many years. Afterwards, there was a subsequent jail break in 72 with some of the members of the Black Panther Party, all right? He had avoided arrest on several occasions. He was arrested and released on several different charges concerning conspiracy, other related charges, weapons charges, and subsequently later on when the FBI and the police agencies renewed the a campaign, a kind of revitalization of the counterintelligence program, and began to retargeting members of the Black Panther Party and other revolutionary groups. Baba Siddiqui was targeted and in 2003 was arrested for a murder of a police officer. Okay, so he has currently been serving a life sentence. Okay, he is now 69 years old. So there's a concerted effort to be able to free Baba Siddiqui. Okay, because he is an elder at this point, and also should be in consideration for a compassionate release, amongst other things. He's also suffering from hepatitis C that has been untreated. He's being malnourished. He has infections and ulcers on his legs. Okay, so there's a concerted effort currently to make sure that he's getting adequate medical attention. But the call now is to free them all, to free Baba Siddiqui. On one instance, on compassionate release, but on the other instance, for reparatory justice, and based on the false targeting of such groups as the Black Panther Party and the political onslaughts and assassinations of characters, jailings, and murders of said party members and other revolutionary groups.
Right, Ashe. And family, of course, you can get more information and also sign up to support by going to, of course, freekamal.com. And again, it's freekamal.com. Okay, one of the other political prisoners that we wanted to, of course, bring to your attention is none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so, again, there is the continual work that is now constantly being put in place to free Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal. With that said, I'd like to go through a couple of words now from Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brother. The revolution will be live.
Terrorist or survivor of terrorism. With the news of the posting of an additional $850,000 for the return of former Black Panther and Black Liberation Army member Assata Shakur from Cuba, the U.S. government has taken another step in its ridiculous so-called war on terrorism. They did this by New Jersey officials branding Assata with the latest libelous label, terrorist, in an attempt to justify this modern-day slave rally. If anybody knows about terrorism, it's Americans, for this nation was founded in terrorism. So deep is this truth that it lies in the subconscious of almost every American and can be unleashed with unnerving ease. Come on, complete this phrase. The only good Indian is a black man. Black, white, rich, or poor, that phrase echoes in American consciousness, an inheritance from a time when those dark thoughts were dark realities of, yes, genocide against the native peoples that fed and healed the starving settlers from Europe who survived the Atlantic crossings. Terrorism, quite terrible violence against red life and black life and brown life and yellow life. That is America's truest hidden history, hidden beneath lies about all men are created equal. In 1973, when Assata Shakur and Zaid Malik Shakur and Sundiata Akoli were stopped on the New Jersey Turnpike, they weren't stopped because the cops wanted to render assistance. This was a car stop for the unwritten crime of driving while black before we developed the term, and the cops tried to kill every Black Panther in that car for this unwritten crime. Zaid was shot to death, and Asana was shot twice. And in an act of arrogance that only American judicial terrorists can devise, she was charged with murdering both Zaid and the cop that tried to kill her. Asana went through a devil's brew of show trials in several states, best summed up in a book by her lawyer aunt, Evelyn Williams, titled Inadmissible Evidence. These were trials that seemed more fitting for Mississippi than Middlesex County, New Jersey, or Manhattan Borough, New York. But no matter where that happened, they featured all-white juries and ambitious judges who didn't even pretend to be fair and unbiased arbiters. Even despite these obvious obstructions, she was acquitted. And when she was convicted in Middlesex, it was clear this was a verdict not of her guilt, but of her political ideas. To label this woman a terrorist is to bleed all meaning from the word. For during her life as an activist, during her wounding at her arrest, and during her travails as an accused in courtrooms that were more lynching posts than halls of justice, she was terrorized by a system that wanted to punish her for daring to rebel. These words are written on May 13, 2005, 20 years to the day from the police mass murder and bombing of the Move Home in Philadelphia. Today, 20 years later, only one person, Ramona Africa, ever spent a day in jail. What of those cops who shot and bombed unarmed children? What of the politicians who unleashed these dogs of urban war? Like Ramona, Asada was jailed for daring to survive. Cuba's valiant Fidel Castro responded almost immediately to announce his refusal to recognize this modern-day slave bounty. He pronounced her a political prisoner during her time in American gulags, perhaps remembering that she was held in an all-male jail during her incarceration. For centuries, nothing has so stirred up American fury like the escape of a slave. That ain't just distant history. For daring to slip her bonds and escape from brutal and unjust bondage, the empire now labels her a terrorist. That's because to them, nothing is more terrifying than resistance to their imperial will. As for terrorists, if they really want to find some, it shouldn't be too hard to find them. Just check the White House. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Indeed, that was Mumia Abu-Jamal. Again, another political prisoner who was targeted as a result of COINTELPRO. Tonight, family, we want to share with you some of the plans of action for the We Charge Genocide 21. As you are probably aware, and if not, then you will be at this point, and it is that the We Charge Genocide 21 is 21 issues, at least, that we are focusing on to bring into whatever venue, be it our communities, be it any kinds of civil action and certainly international action. Those 21 areas have to now be brought forward. And so the boots on the ground kinds of work and campaign is now in effect to make sure that the masses of our people are in fact educated, ready to be organized, and then, of course, for mobilization. There is so much going on in the world today, as we hear many talk about what's going on in Gaza, Palestine, etc. But at the same time, we have to still be very cognizant about what's going on with us right here and that impact that it is having on our communities, on our families. As you just heard, Noumi Abu-Jamal just mentioned something very important, and that is the bombing that took place here in Philadelphia in 1985. Well, while that may seem like a long time for some, let me just fast forward and share with you why that's so significant today. Last year, we learned that some of the remains from the children that were killed in the 1985 bombing, some of those remains were in fact utilized for research, for college study, or for, you know, other kinds of interactions that should not have occurred, particularly given the fact that the family of those children knew nothing about the fact that they were being utilized for students to be able to examine and you know, research on it and so forth. The city of Philadelphia, of course, apologized for that. And the coroner and others either resigned and or were fired. But once again, what did the community, the black community in particular, what did it do? Well, interestingly enough, a few, of course, always will speak out. But in another kind of manner, we did not see the kind of response that we should have, as in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. There was a lot of response to the bombing, but there was not a continuation of response to that bombing over a few years until very recently. And again, that was primarily as a result of the findings in that it was discovered that the children's remains were being utilized inappropriately. And so with that said, family, this past week we learned that the city of Philadelphia once again did something to kind of, if not gloss over the atrocity, at least we feel it was something to once again do a sort of a hoodwinking. And what I mean by that is the city of Philadelphia created an exhibit, the first supposedly permanent exhibit of this type, meaning that now you can come to Philadelphia and see an exhibit on the MOVE bombing, the bombing of the MOVE organization, but also the ethnic cleansing, or shall I say, the human rights violation of a community. Now, this is where the We Charge Genocide 21 comes in at, because while the first commission, kind of focused on the actual atrocity of the bombing, and the MOVE Commission is what it was called, which was really interesting, because if you've heard any of our interviews with Sister Ramona, Sister Janet, Janine Africa, you know, they always made it very clear that, why was it called the MOVE bombing? It was the Philadelphia doing the bombing. And anyway, the point is that this system has a capability of creating illusions. And so we feel that this exhibit, while it is good in one sense because it definitely helps to provide information, education, but at the same time, for those of you who tuned into our program a few weeks ago, you heard, of course, sisters Janine and Janet, and in that it was conveyed that, guess what? Sister Ramona wasn't even aware that this exhibit was being, you know, being put in place, done, or what have you. She heard about it, but that's as far as it went. So how could you have an exhibit about something of that nature and you not even talk with the only survivor of that? Now, remember, 11 people were murdered, 5 of them children. Ramona Africa is the only survivor, period. There was 2 survivors, Verdi Africa, that's what he was called. He, of course, now is no longer. So Ramona is the only survivor, but yet the city of Philadelphia felt no need to talk with her, to whatever, to invite her to the unveiling, perhaps, nothing. Not that she would have gone, I don't know, but the point is to at least to have extended an invitation. But this gives you the kind of insight into the kind of things that goes on here in Philadelphia and in other cities too. The type of disrespect, the type of disregard. So again, on this day, as we talk about the incredible, courageous, and just profound action that was taken on this day to free Sister Assata Shakur, you all have got to know that, I mean, that had to be and is one of the most powerful things in our history in terms of modern day. It just has to be. To have people to go into a prison and to get someone, I mean, you've never heard of it before. So truly, that was, I mean, people talk about their spirituality and things of that nature. Well, that truly, as far as I'm concerned, was a true demonstration of it. Now, the thing that we want to also share with everyone is that as we proceed with the Million Woman March and now the Million Woman World March, we're going to be bringing greater attention to the fact that a $2 million bounty is on our head. Not 1 million, not 1.5 million. It is now up to 2 million on her head. And so for those who do not know, we literally had a message read at the Million Woman March in 1997 from Sister Assata Shakur. It was read both in English and in Spanish. So this is not something that we just came up with last week, or we're not just jumping on, you know, somebody's wagon or whatever, because, you know, that's what we've kind of seen people do nowadays. It's not about consistency. It's not necessarily about real kinds of actions to make things happen, and definitely doesn't have the kind of longevity. Of course, some do. You know, you got the Jericho movement, of course, and others that constantly, consistently do the kind of work in regards to our political prisoners and so forth. But at the same time, what I've noticed over the years is that, you know, a lot of times people jump into things because at the moment it appears exciting, or you know, they're able to create this illusion of their involvement in certain things, which oftentimes now for me is another form of COINTELPRO, because it's so easy now to get into, you know, different aspects of the movement and as a result give people some form of credibility. But what you have to begin to now look at is, again, consistency. Being able to not only remain, but to grow and develop. And so these are some of the things that we're going to now start introducing into our movement that will now consist of study groups and other kinds of things that our people, particularly our sisters now, need to get involved with. With that said, family, before we give you the last, I guess, political prisoner information that we wanted to share with you. We were hoping that we could get someone from the actual committee to join us. Unfortunately, hold on 1 minute. I'm trying to pull something up here. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get someone either from Jericho or from Iman Jamil's organization, or shall I say defense committee. But so we're just going to share with you some of the information that we have about him, because, again, it is important that you do know the names, the how you can get more information, and so forth, about some of the people who literally put their lives, you know, in jeopardy for us. And so we would be remiss if we did not share with you information about, you know, some of these people, and of course encourage folk to, you know, to go to those websites, to sign up for information and so forth. So in the situation of Iman Jamil Al-Amin, you can go to Jamal Action. Okay, hold on 1 minute. Okay, so actually it's Iman Jamil Action Network.org. Okay, Iman Jamil Action Network.org. And you're able to go there and get, I mean, it's a lot of information about him. But I'm going to share some brief information with you as we proceed. But again, for those who do not know the name Iman Jamil Al-Amin, you might know the name H-Rat Brown. And again, we are talking about these things in the context of COINTELPRO. Again, with the Recharge Genocide 21, one of the areas that we're focusing on is to make certain that the crimes of COINTELPRO are, in fact, addressed. We can't just go through a process of charging genocide and not make sure that there's not an adequate response and redress to some very specific things, and particularly the things that we can document and show that these are, in fact, acts that were intentional, that were diabolical and dangerous, and certainly created not only the destruction of many of our groups and organizations, but also of our people, our families, and communities, hence genocide. So tomorrow, family, there's going to be a Zoom meeting starting, I believe, at 7 o'clock. It will be for sisters. Sisters, we call it Black Women for Reparatory Justice. And one of the missions for that particular collective is to now develop information and other kinds of programs that specifically geared to our women that focuses on the issue of reparation / reparatory justice, but also to make sure that our children are provided with ample information that will allow and make sure that our children are able to be educated / edified about some of these things that many are now talking about, and to do it in such a way that a child can grasp it, you know, can really be able to comprehend what it is and be ready for the future. And so we're looking at now coloring books, flashcards, and other kinds of materials for the children to help them to get not only more acclimated, but again, to be more prepared. Who is Mother Callie House? Who is Queen Mother Moore? What role did Malcolm X play in the idea of human rights violations? Of course, that would be for some of the older children. But again, these are some of the things that as women, we must begin to make certain that our children are given some solid, concrete types of information. And so now with the Million Woman World March, that is on our list. That's a part of our agenda to develop educational you know, kinds of tools and materials for our children. And, of course, not just for reparations / reparatory justice, but for other things as well. So, again, tomorrow at 7 o'clock, we'll be doing a Zoom meeting for the sisters who are interested in being a part of the We Charge Genocide 21 and the Million Woman World March collective or unit, and this will be specifically gearing with Black women for reparatory justice. It's a collective, one of the new collectives as a part of the Million Woman World March, the Million Woman March Universal Movement. And also then at 8:30, there's going to be another Zoom meeting, and that's going to be for brothers and sisters who are in business. Because with the Recharge Genocide 21, we have to now look at how are we going to deal with this idea or with this question of equity, particularly as it pertains to the business side of this whole thing. And again, focusing on the kinds of races and inequalities that our people in terms of business had to deal with over the decades, particularly over the past maybe seven decades that we can actually document. Again, when we talk about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, this is kind of a time period that we can gauge things from, 1948. And this year, of course, marks the 75th year. So in the 75th year, we need to really make certain that we have plans of action that represent and that encompasses this whole thing. So we just recently heard that reparations for Tulsa, for the survivors of Tulsa, was denied. Well, our position is we must not allow that to happen, but also we must now include our communities in the struggle for reparations. In other words, it can't just be individuals in the context of a family or families. It has to be as a people. And so we figured out now how we're going to proceed with that. For example, here in Philadelphia, with a bomb being dropped, our position is, yes, this was an act against a specific group of our people in this city. However, it also affected all of our people in this city, black folks, that is, because if there's an idea of post-trauma syndrome, then that also needs to be applicable to other sociological realms. And so we're going to state that kind of position now, that overall, the impact on the black community here in Philadelphia, we can pretty much show that from 1985 to present day, it has gone so downhill. And a part of that is because there's never been a healing. There's never been any real kinds of justice, definitely not for the family, and certainly not for the community at large. Because remember, it was the community at large that also was there that day watching all of this happen. Literally, not just watching, but experiencing all of what was going on in the city at that time. And since then, I can tell you firsthand, it has created a real problem, meaning the morale in the city, the integrity of the city in terms of black folks in our communities has really declined. The activism in a certain type has definitely declined. People are not as, for lack of a better word, radical. And we feel that that's a part of fear. Again, to see an entire block go up in flames, to know that 11 people were murdered, to know that no one went to jail except for Ramona Africa, who was a victim, that sends a serious message. And it created a very interesting result. And this is one of the reasons why for Philadelphia, the so-called leadership here is not only weak, but it does not stand up against certain issues. For example, here in Philadelphia, if there is one politician that has spoken up about the incarceration of Mumia Abu-Jamal, particularly after last year, particularly after boxes were found all this time that nobody knew anything about except for the people who knew about it. But to now, you know, kind of know that there's not anyone really speaking up about that in the political arena, that's a clear indication that, you know, the people here really are either afraid or just irresponsible, one or the other or both. The point is, the 1985 bombing here in Philadelphia did more than what most talk about, more than what meets the eye. Sure, the obvious is there, and certainly the Move family, that particular community, suffered, we believe, the most, obviously. But the other part of that story has not been told. So what we're saying to you all, family, tonight is if you're interested in being a part of the National Commission on the bombing of the Move organization, and what we also cite as being a part of the destruction of the Black community here in Philadelphia, we welcome any of you to be a part of this national committee. Again, there was a committee here in Philadelphia that was called the Move Commission, and we're going to examine the reports from that commission, but also we want to do our own, because there needs to be a tribunal. And again, if other people can bring people to court decades after it happened, why can't we? And we should. So again, it behooves us to put an independent committee together, which is what we're doing, so that anyone that is really interested can be a part of this committee, but also with the intent to ultimately compile the information, review it, critique it, document it, disseminate it, and then be able to present it adequately to the United Nations and other entities. This atrocity needs to be put on record as a crime against humanity in such a way that, let us say, like none other. Of course, Tulsa in the early 1900s, but after 1948, where nations signed on to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that time period, from that time on up to now, there's been nothing of this type in the Black community, in an urban environment, or in a community that was predominantly Black, if not totally Black. So the point is, it is our responsibility to make certain that this crime is put into the arenas that it needs to be put into for historical purposes as well as for direct action. So again, tomorrow we will talk more about interested. We'll be able to sign up on a task force committee, for lack of better terminology. But again, our intention is to make certain that we are able to organize, educate, and take action. And this must now be placed in an arena and a venue that is not just dealing with civil rights, because up to this point, that is what has happened. But we now are going to make sure we put it into human rights. All right. We're going to get ready to close out, family, but before we do, we are going to share with you another clip from, another clip that we want to share with you from Sister Asada this time. So bear with me. I'm getting ready to cue it up for you. And we're going to open up the mic for anyone that might have a question or a comment. But in the meantime, there we go. In the meantime, let's hear from Sister Sada. Hold on 1 minute. Here we go.
Determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with both arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment and imprisoned. Is that justice? I was tried by an all-white jury without even the pretext of impartiality and then sentenced to life in prison plus 33 years. Is that justice? Let me emphasize that justice for me is not the issue I am addressing here. It is justice for my people that is at stake. When my people receive justice, I am sure that I will receive it too.
That is an excerpt.
All right. Again, that was, of course, Sister Asada Shakur. And breaking it down to you, what happened again, November 2nd, 1979. She is, again, presently still in exile in Cuba, and there is still a $2 million bounty on her head. Now, family, can't help but to ask, why would there be $2 million on her head? And you know, surely there are real criminals that have committed all types of atrocities, all types of crimes. But yet, you know, you don't hear anything even close to that. Again, it demonstrates, it indicates a type of injustice. Again, it was a pleasure and an honor to have Sister Asada's message read at the original Million Woman March. We very much hope that we are able to accomplish something next year when we do the Million Woman World March. We want to put on record that while, you know, some thought we were going to do it this year, again, strategically, that was not what was really going to happen. We wanted to deal with launching, organizing, and wanted to really see who was going to step up, who was going to support, and now we know. But definitely for next year, we will be in Washington, D.C. We will have the Million Woman World March there in October, and then in November we'll be going on to one of the CARICOM countries. We'll give you more information very, very soon because we're locking down a lot of things before we put too much information out, because from experience, what we learned is that, you know, you put out too much information and, you know, unless your enemies get them too much to work with. And so we've known that for a while. And with that said, I want to just thank Miss Gabby, who, you know, was one of our infiltrators. I want to thank her for really helping us to know to a greater extent what the new type of COINTELPRO is today. The other thing we want to share with everyone, too, is, again, we're hoping by December 9th, which, of course, is a commemoration day for Mumia Abu-Jamal, we're hoping to have back from him our first kinds of information for our Mumia Abu-Jamal correspondence course, which we talked about some time ago. We're now ready to do it. When we initially talked about it, Mumia was very ill. And, of course, you know, we had to wait until his health had improved. And so we're hoping now we're able to proceed with a correspondence course whereby Mumia Abu-Jamal is able to provide instruction on journalism from his perspective, from his vantage point, so we can begin to not only train particularly younger folk, but also advance those who are already in that arena of writing, journalism, investigation work, etc. We have to develop our own everything, which is one of our slogans, our own everything forever. And again, as we proceed with the Men and Women World March, we're calling it the Sankofa. You know, going back to the roots. That's right, the Sankofa expedition, journey, because right now we have to kind of go back, look back, but also make sure we're moving forward. And so the preparation to move forward is to make sure we do understand the past, and that is part of this new mission. So what we're going to do now, excuse me, is open up the mic. If anyone has a question or a comment, you can press one now, and we certainly would love to hear from you. Again, we're talking about this being a annual day for us now for MWM, and that is our ASADA Liberation Day. Now, you probably are aware that we have other days, too, that we are commemorating. We have Sister Claude Muhammad Day. We just commemorated Yasatawa Day. Of course, the Thailu Hema Day. You know, we are very adamant now in making certain, particularly that the history of our women are, you know, is brought out to a greater extent. Because what we're finding is that, you know, for some strange reason, our sisters' history, work, et cetera, is kind of marginalized, and that puts it mildly. But just like with the Million Women March, I find it so interesting that every year, you know, different Black Studies departments, African Studies departments, et cetera, they have annual conferences and other kinds of programs for Black History Month and Women's History Month. But yet, very little ever invitation is extended to the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever. I just find that to be so very interesting. And also with historians, I mean, you know, why are we not mentioned? And here's the part that's really kind of interesting. Do people realize that the enemy realizes how less care is being done in that regard? And so while some don't feel the need to do the right thing in making certain that history, her story, is, you know, put out there, you know, best believe that is not just a disservice to our women. That's a disservice to our people. And so, you know, we have to now say that, because levels of accountability really need to now be put in place. So with that said, family, we are going to move on and get ready to close out. Again, if there's a question or a comment that you would like to share, certainly we welcome you to do so. And we want to remind you again tomorrow, starting at, let me see what time, I believe 7 o'clock. Yep, starting at 7 o'clock, there's only going to be an hour session for sisters, Black women, who are interested in what we call Preparatory for Justice. There'll be a Zoom meeting at 7 o'clock. That particular group will be mapping out strategies for our women in dealing with the issue of reparations, reparatory justice, but also one of the key focuses, as I mentioned earlier, is, of course, making certain that our children ample information about reparations and other related matters. And so while we know that, you know, history is provided on civil rights and other kinds of things, and that's fine, but what responsibility do we have, or are we allowing ourselves to have, when it comes to making certain that our children is getting ample information about reparations and those things relevant to that? Okay, so with that said, we get ready to move right along, family. It doesn't seem like anybody has a question or comment, and that's fine. But again, tomorrow night we hope you all will join us starting at 7 o'clock on Zoom. If you would like the information and you don't have it already, because we did start sending it out, but if you have not received it and you would like to get the information again, 7 o'clock, it's for sisters. Then at 8:30, it is for anyone, all of our people, any of our people, particularly if there's a business focus, because we're developing a new cadre, a new unit of Recharge Genocide that's connected to MWM, but it will focus on what does reparations look like in the context of business, okay? What are business folk thinking about, wanting to think about, want to see accomplished when it comes to reparations? Should there be a specific fund for the development of black business? And if so, how are we going to do that? Well, again, with the Recharge Genocide, we're creating a society, because when this thing really starts moving forward, we have to be organized. And so to develop a society with the context of nation building, it puts us in a position where we can speak for ourselves. And those that are interested in that modality will have an apparatus to be able to do what we need to do. There's a lot of different groups. There's a lot of different this and that, and that's fine. And people should get in where they fit in. But if folks are looking for something a bit more in-depth or a bit more extensive, then we will be bringing that to them. Again, we're talking about nationality. We're talking about dealing with one's family history, but also connecting it to a more community, village, tribe, whichever you prefer, so that we can move forward, and it's not just individual entities who are, being able to benefit, all right? And that's fine. I'm not saying that that shouldn't happen, but I'm saying that we got to do it nation building as well. So tomorrow we'll be talking more about that. And also, again, sisters, for the sisters that come in at 7 o'clock, there is going to be pre-plebiscite discussions for the sisters. Because, again, we want to make sure that the children are ready for certain types of actions that we feel will be happening in the future. All right. And, again, because what I've realized is that our women are oftentimes used to further other folks' agendas and movements and things of that nature. Well, let me tell you, that's not happening with us. Let's be real clear. We've watched this thing very, very carefully. So now, we are going to not only encourage our sisters to take their rightful places, we're going to help them to do that. All right? And anyway, family, okay, I see there's one person that has a question or comment, so let's do that. We're going to go to caller at 9055. 9055, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
What's up, my sister? This is OBS Guna out of D.C.
Oh, greetings. Greetings. How are you, my brother?
I'm fine. I'm fine. First of all, I want to commend you for acknowledging the significance of this day, as it is the 50th anniversary of my sister standing, having that standoff. And what it represents is the role of women as guerrilla fighters, whether we're talking about Queen Nanny with the Maroons, whether we're talking about our sisters in Eritrea that made up 33% of the guerrilla fighters, the highest level in history. As everybody's focusing on Palestine, let us not forget that the highest ranking woman guerrilla in Palestine was an African woman named Fatima Benali. So as his sister Sada definitely walks that path. And just wanted to share real quickly that 3 weeks ago, a campaign was launched called the Assata Shakur Cuba Defense Campaign, and it has three objectives: to get her off the terrorist list, which the Obama administration placed her on 10 years ago, to get the $2 million bounty off her head, which you mentioned a few minutes ago, but also to get Cuba off the United States list of nations they accuse of state-sponsored terrorism. And we had an incredible press conference. We had the Caribbean News Network there. The Final Call was there. WURD was there, who you introduced us to four years ago. four Pacifica radio outlets were there. So there was media from all over the country. Youth from Burkina Faso, from the Thomas Sankara Center, spoke. Councilman Charles Barron spoke. The longest-serving state senator in the history of Alabama, Hank Sanders, spoke. Attorney Mary Cox, who's had audience with our sister on two different occasions, who was the lawyer that exposed that the FBI spent $90 million to entrap Marion Barry 33 years ago, spoke. The Grammy-nominated artist Maymuna Youssef spoke. So in my 28 years of doing work centered around Cuba, it was the most inclusive outward expression for Cuba. And from October 11th to the day of the press conference, all the way till February 21st next year, we're calling on Africans all over the world to have activities for our sister and for Cuba. So far, 14 universities have said that they will do something. The Teratibu Youth Association in Washington, D.C. has said they would do something. We should be we're having audiences with the drumming and dancing ensembles over the Western Hemisphere so that they can do something. And the children from the Mass Emphasis Children's Positive Action and Creativity Youth Brigade will be having an art show in Sister Asada's honor on November 25th as a follow-up to the art show they had in recognition of the Henry Reed Medical Brigade back in August. So I just wanted to share that in relationship to work. And we have an appeal with those three objectives highlighted. And the tradition of the appeal, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey posed 100 years ago, the appeal to white America, as this year is the 50th anniversary of Amy Jacques Garvey passing, the 40th anniversary of Maurice Bishop's assassination, the 50th anniversary of Amilcar Cabral's assassination. We think that this campaign is timely, and especially since the only other nation in favor of the blockade on Cuba is the Zionist State of Israel. We go from sympathy for Palestinians to solidarity with them while we fight Zionism for the multitude of reasons that Africans should feel obligated to fight them. So in Sister Asada's name, in Cuba's name, and for all women like yourself who embrace the fighting spirit that best defines her, we were glad you're doing this, and we look forward to continuing to work with everyone as we pursue these objectives. So thank you very much.
Ashe. Well, thank you, Brother Obi. I wish we had known about the press conference before now, but, you know, what can I say? And given the fact that we're the only, of in terms of the marches and so forth, we're the only one that highlighted Sister Asada. But, you know, we will continue to move forward and certainly look forward to, you know, hopefully getting some information
as it comes out. And for those who haven't seen it, we definitely have the video. So we sent that out to everybody all over the world. So apologize if for whatever reason it didn't come your way. But it is because of what you did and continue to do that we're looking to continue to partner around this. So thank you very much. And we just received an – go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, okay, that's fine.
All right, so thank you very much. On behalf of everybody that's been part of this campaign, you say take care and let's continue to work and serve like history obligates us to do. Thank you.
Onward. All right, family, moving right along. We are going to play something now, again, from Sister Asada. And again, I'm really glad to hear that the press conference went that well. Again, I wish I had known earlier. But, you know, that's kind of the norm for what I'm seeing with a lot of things. But anyway, let's move on and let's hear some words from Sister Asada.
One of Mamiya's radio broadcasts. It was the first time I fully understood why the United States government was so intent on putting him to death. I make a special appeal to you, sisters and brothers, to fight tooth and nail to save Mamiya's life and to free him from the grips of his oppressors. As you honor our forefathers and foremothers, I urge you to honor our living heroes. When you honor the names of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, and Malcolm X, I urge you to honor the names of Geronimo Gijaga, Sundiata Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. I urge you not to forget and not to betray our living heroes. If we ignore their struggle, we are ignoring our own. If we betray our living history, then we are betraying ourselves. We could not save Malcolm X, but we can save Mumia. We can save him, and we must save him, because we love our brother, and we need our brother for freedom. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, free all political prisoners. Let us carry on our tradition to freedom.
I say, again, that was Sister Sada. And again, you know, this is what we're talking about, that it is so important that we are able to share the information with the masses of our people. We are grassroots, and so we make certain that we make things available easily, readily, and again, to make sure that the message of Sister Sada is matriculated, circulated amongst our people. And so, family, we're asking you, please take this information. This radio broadcast, of course, is recorded. You can share it with others, but it is so important that we develop our own kinds of media apparatuses. For whatever reason, MWM is not included in a lot of things, and we're going to make it clear that we've noted this, and in doing so, it's really, you know, brother, one of our brothers who made transition a few years ago, and we highlighted his work last month as well, brother, his name just escaped me, the brother Mata, you know, he talks about internal reparations. And so, you know, we have to look at how are we going to repair internally, but certainly we can't do that if, in fact, we're not, you know, being justly with one another. And so, again, what I have to make it a point to do now is to try to lessen some of these internal contradictions, and particularly the kind of push to the side of the work of our women. And I'm talking about right here, right now, right? And with that said, big ups to Sister Pam Africa, who has always been supportive, ongoing, not just periodically, but ongoing, and the, you know, other sisters as well. We thank you all, and brothers too, by the way. Ken Bridges was his name that I was trying to think of earlier. But again, it is so important that we focus on reparations all across the board, internally, externally, and of course, making certain that our message is, you know, really put out there in every way possible. Also, I want to give a quick shout out to the RNA. I understand that they are having their elections. And again, we salute the Republic of New Africa, the work that they have done and are doing. And again, you know, have set examples for some of us to know that it is not only possible, but it is necessary to focus on nation building. And that, of course, is what MWM is about. All right, family, listen, we are going to close this session out. And again, we're going to move forward. Tomorrow, starting at 7 o'clock, is for our sisters who are interested in reparations, reparatory justice, for our women to be able to sit together and begin to formulate strategies that we as sisters can begin to implement as we proceed with making certain that reparations is obtained in our lifetime. We do not want the continuation of what we call deferred dream syndrome. We do not want that. So with that said, family, we are going to, let me see, I wanted to try to cue up something with Brother Mumia. I think I'm going to wait, though, until we are able to come on our program on Saturday. Okay? So what we're going to do is close out with another message, because this is what it's really about. So again, family, we will talk with you, I guess, tomorrow when we do the Zoom meeting, but definitely we will talk with you next show. Our regular program will be Saturday at 10:30 p.m. Until then, living on the front line, we're out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,